Zero TR. Rumble.
Noon, Tom. W4DJW Mobile.
Good afternoon, Dave. Let me turn my radio down in the background here. Well, I'm just headed down for an eye appointment. I got a little... Well, I had a little infection in my right eye, and I don't know what it is. Maybe I scratched it or something. I'm not sure, but I got to go get it checked up again. He gave me some antibiotic for it last time, but I don't know. I don't think it done anything for it. It's not bothering me a whole lot, so that's very unusual for an eye thing, isn't it?
I remember getting a flake of metal in my eye when I was working at Michelin. I was grinding something. And, man, it tore me up. I had to go to the doctor, take an unexpected trip to the doctor and get them to dig that thing out. He said it was getting rusty in there. Your eye keeps metal wet all the time, and it starts oxidizing. And that's what he said was bothering me, was that it was getting rusty.
We know what a glass scale is for feedback on the side of a machine tool. I was working on a Sony readout one time, and I was trying to get down at the transducer that picks up the signal there to see if the wires were broke. They were like frog hairs. They were very small, but supposedly well protected. But you know how chips build up. And I took an air hose, which is a no-no, and reached down there to blow it off, and I blowed 8 pieces into my eye. But, you know, I didn't really know it until, like you say, the next day they started rusting, actually, later in the day, I think. It's been many years ago, Dave. But he had me look through one of those four-opters and took what looked like a center punch with a burr on the end of it and sat there and dug them out of my eye. I don't know if he gave me any stuff to numb it or not, but it was very uncomfortable, I can tell you that.
Annoying than that. I think when I did that, I was single, and I was working at Michelin. I had to call my dad. I was riding, I rode my motorcycle to work, and I couldn't ride my motorcycle. I couldn't see it. I mean, I couldn't walk down the hall without bumping into a wall because I couldn't keep my eyes open because it hurt so bad. And he came and got me and took me to the doctor. And the doctor dug it out of there. The doctor said he could see it plain as day, and he said it would take a few days for that to recover. Your eyeballs normally cover pretty quick, but he had to go in there and cut it open to get it out.
And I had a detached retina in that eye, I think it was, years and years ago. And they took a YAG laser. I'm pretty sure it was green. And he had me looking through one of those things, you know, and he numbed my eye, and he was, I think, Iranian and broken English somewhat, but very nice individual. By the way, is that road done down by you yet, or are they still working on it while I'm here at this corner?
Now just passing the church, headed toward the horse farm, and there's nobody working it today. It's flowing freely at this end of the road anyway, and I just came from Target, so far it's flowing freely all the way from Target to the horse farm.
I appreciate that. I'm going to go ahead and turn and take a chance, because I didn't see a flagman here at the corner. Boy, this is sure nice. I'm not very many blocks off of 101 from your house. Just coming around the curves. But, he had a foot pedal, and every time he'd step down on it, it'd be zap, 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 like that. Never necessarily the same number of zaps. Finally, I jerked, and he said, well, I can stick a needle in your eye and insert some deadener in behind your eye with a hypodermic. I said, no, I won't move anymore.
Kind of scary. I told that doctor do whatever he needed to do. It was I was close to the point where I was going to reach in there and pull my eyeball out of the socket myself and scratch it on the back side of the eyeball. It was that bad. But he took care of it. And I think I had to wear a patch for a couple of days or something like that. But, that's frustrating. I hope yours gets better pretty quick. You don't have to suffer. I just turned opposite of the horse farm into the subdivision, so you're probably going to go by there any second. I just barely did miss you.
I'm about 100 yards behind you right here at those electric trucks that are parked in there. Oh, shoot, Dave. Well, I'm sure glad to hear you this afternoon. And I heard that noise again the other night about the same time, about 10:30 at night back there. It sounded like a fuel pump, but I just get in and turn the car off and on and it quit. But I may not have should have done that. I don't know. What do you call them, the CAN bus?
Dealing with communication within the car. And they're just sending signals, you know, throughout your car just constantly. Things being measured, compensated for, and all that stuff. All this stuff on your steering wheel that you can push buttons and it does things. All of those are messages. So, it's not like they're individual components wired to each other. They're all wired to the computer, and the computer does all the work.
Yeah, I was aware it was there, and it's they've had that bus for a long time, but I didn't know what it was called. Sort of like a PLC, I guess.
Well, I think it's an extension of the I2C bus, which is a much simpler version of the CAN bus. The CAN bus is just a lot more robust. It can run a lot faster, and it can go a lot further on the wire before you have to amplify the signal. Anyway, it's pretty cool. I'm still learning about it. I'm just scratching the surface. I told Amy I'm going to make an app for our phones, and we won't have to have key dongles anymore. We can just, you can start it from your phone, even if you're on the other side of the country. You can start a car up, shut it down, and set the temperature inside, and you know, do whatever you want to it. Lock the doors or unlock the doors, all from your phone. If you can wire a ESP32, which is a microprocessor that will connect to the internet, you wire that into that ODB onboard diagnostics too. OBD2. You wire it to that thing. And you can do, there's just about no end to what you can do. Or you can do anything remotely that you can do pushing buttons inside your car.
KI4MRI.
Roger. Acknowledging KI4MRI. Well, you know, Dave, that alarm company down there on Main Street in Greer, when I had my alarms put in my cars years ago, they offered that, and you could do it with your cell phone. He said you could start your car in California, but it was a monthly payment, and I didn't want to do that. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, good afternoon, y'all. Just wanted to jump in on that CAN bus communication with the OBD connector. There's actually other buses on the other side of that. You got the local interconnect bus, and you got the infotainment bus, the body bus. There's a lot of different buses within the cars nowadays. Generally, the body control module is what communicates. The body control module is generally the gateway to the CAN.
And the environmental bus, there's like 7 or 8 different buses. And you can query for each one of the buses to find out. I think the life-saving equipment's on its own bus. They keep that separated from all of the buses so you can't mess that one up, like the airbags and stuff like that. Anyway, guys, I am in the driveway pulling in the garage, and I'll shut the garage door. But anyway, good talking to you, Tom. KF4MRI, W4DJW. Go ahead and pick it up, Tom.
73's name. I'm always interested in that. Very interesting. Go ahead, sir.
There's a lot that goes on within the communications of cars now. I was GM mechanic for about 20 years before I got into aviation. And all the things we had to learn just to be able to troubleshoot is just astronomical.
Did I get that name right? That's what I thought. My golly, I'm getting better. I remembered your call sign, Fred, but nice to hear you. Ah, that sounds very interesting. Oh, I just was talking to Dave. He's learning to program these things and that for a company, I think. But he's absolutely brilliant on that stuff. Anything involving computers. But I was just telling him the other day, I have a 2022 Avalon, but it was used. It had 8,700 miles on it. And I heard something running, which is back by the fuel tank there. That's my radio room where I park at, and in the basement. And it just kind of worried me. So I went over and just turned the ignition on and off, and it never done it again. Any ideas, Fred?
I've been sitting a while without being driven or anything of that nature, or did you just drive it in?
No, it'd been sitting a while.
Do you know if it has the air ride suspension or anything like that on it?
Everything, but I don't think that's in there, Fred. It's just the limited model.
It could have been a number of things. It could have been the, not the purge valve, the other EVAP valve back there. I can't think of the name of it right now. Could have been the vent valve. Could have been that running. It could have been any number of things. Could have been the fuel pump. Who knows?
Do that on their own now, huh? That's interesting. Well, the fuel tank's filled. I never overfill it. But I keep it filled pretty regularly. I'm 75 years old, Fred, and if it gets down to half tank, I fill it up.
Yeah, with today's cars, man, there's just so many things that could go wrong at any time. It could be a glitch in programming software that one of the modules is waking up when it's not supposed to and commanding something. There's just too many things.
I worked on machine tools almost all of my life, and for 50 years, and all started out on vacuum tubes, Fred, control the motor generator sets, and even before that, where you had huge rheostats, and then SCR drives, pulse width modulation, right up to variable frequencies. By the time I retired, I did work on them a little bit, but not a whole lot. But, from the very ancient things to what's currently there, just about.
Yeah, but you're very versed in it. I can hear.
Yeah, and I had to study a lot. I don't have a degree, but I made it a policy every night when I got home to study for at least an hour and a half, 2 hours for many, many, many years. And I think I kind of still do in a way, but not on that. But mostly Morse code. I love Morse code. And I sit down in the basement, the wife watches TV, and I work DX.
Man, I started learning CW when I was flying, and I just haven't had, honestly, the time to pick it back up. That's one thing I do want to learn, because I want to start going and doing POTAs and SOTAs.
A lot of them work single sideband, too, and I'll go up there and work single sideband. I just don't care for Randy because of the sound of it. The wife doesn't like it, and she's down there with me usually. We've been married 55 years. And so I try to keep it as quiet as I can, and then I check in the net of an evening, and I keep that turned down. And times I forget it, and I'm sitting there working CW. What plane did you use the CW key on?
Little app on my phone. I don't remember what it's called. That was kind of teaching me, and you had to kind of tap it back. It started working. Honestly, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't remember any of it right this minute.
Nephew, he flies 787s. I got him into Morse code because he was flying C-130s at the time, and the identifiers are still, for the airports, are still in CW, but I think he's long since given that up.
Yeah, I'm going to get proficient on it, and then I'm going to actually jump on the air with it. I've got a FT-991 at home that I use primarily for my HF.
Well, I don't know what class of license you is. It's the class of the person, not the class of the license that I like. But if you go up, like, from in 40 meters, if you go up 25 kilohertz up to about 50, you'll hear slower CW so you can learn it. And also, the ARRL, they transmit on W1AW every single day on multiple bands during the day, at night. depending on the band and the propagation. But it's a great way to learn because they start out at 5 words a minute and go up to 30, I think it is, or 35.
Yeah, I knew about that. It's kind of really, really busy at home, just getting through the holidays and everything. I'm hoping everything will start settling down after March. We got a 25th wedding anniversary coming up next month, and we're going on a cruise the first week of March. I'm hoping after that everything will kind of settle down and I can get back into doing some HF and FTA.
Well, congratulations, Fred. That's great. Nowadays, if it's over a year, it's exceptional. 25, that's wonderful. Oh, I remember our 50th vividly. They surprised me over at the Little Rebel. I never dreamed of it. And, boy, they sucker punched me there. We walked in, and there was a gazillion people there, everywhere from Boston, all over the country, Michigan, you name it. It was really wonderful of them. Sneaky, too, I might add. Well, where are you going cruising to, Fred?
Charleston down to the Bahamas. What is it, Nassau, Bahamas, Half Moon Cay. It's a 5-day cruise.
I work CW down in there quite often. The Mediterranean's really, really easy from here. But they do operate SODAs and POTAs. NY4G is probably one of the best CW operators I know. And he does a lot of the summits on the air. I don't know if he is this time of year, but a great individual and brilliant. I mean, he can design antennas. And I miss him. He hadn't been by in a while. He's been very busy too, Fred. CW takes time and elbow grease is what I tell people, and it really does. And some people just don't put some devote to it. But I would say it's a great method of propagation. It gets through when nothing else will.
TI4 MRA for ID. I agree with you. CW makes it through every time. Well, 98% of the time, I would say. So it's on my list to learn. Like I say, once life calms down here, I'm going to jump back on it and get more active in the radio.
Well, ironically, I think I might be in a little bit of a hole here, but I should be coming out. And I'll wait till I get to the top of the hill here. But ironically, on the P3 Orions that I was on, the A's and the B's, mostly the B's, they had a CW key, but I did not learn it there. I learned it on my own later on, and I was kind of ashamed into it. I had a friend that stepped on a landmine in Vietnam and lost both his eyes, and I'd go down to help him, and he had an extra class license, and I thought, well, if Elton can do it, and he's blind, so can I. And I've worked a few people that were blind that were very fine CW operators. Let's send Gerald to you.
Yeah, when I was flying on the 7-4, we actually had two HF radios, and I would actually have made almost 20 contacts crossing the pond using the HF radio in the 7-4. Flew with another, all our pilots, 90% of our pilots were Icelandic, and had one. Every time I flew with him, he was calling me into the cockpit because he was a licensed ham in Iceland. And we would just sit there and rack up the contacts, man. It was great.
Yeah, a few maritime mobiles are not real common. Steve says they have it on board the commercial aircraft, but I think they use ICARs a lot, and I think that takes it up. I'm not sure, but he never did use it, but he called me one night when I was living in Kansas, and he said, Elsie says, and that's N0TR, that's Tom Rouse, that's my nieces. And he says, go look out your backyard. And I was out in the garage in the tow shack. And he turned on the maintenance lights underneath an MD-80. And I looked up there and I ran back in the shack. And I was on a handy talkie, but I had a hook with Bean, and he was on a handy-talky in the cockpit, and his command pilot gave him permission. And he said, "You see that, Rouse?" And I said, "Yeah, I did. It looked like a star moving across there." He says, "You finally seen the light."
Oh, yeah, I never played. We had 2 meter in there. I could get to it, but of course, it was all AM. Most of the time, I played on HF. I usually played on 20 meters and had a good time with it. And talked to quite a few guys all at once.
And there's got to be a logical reason why they never changed from AM. I just never understood that. But I think some mighty peculiar things happened. We was in a S2 Grumman, which is a twin-engine reciprocating engine in a submarine plane in San Diego one day. And of course, we wore full helmets and that, and it was a lot more crowded. There were just four of us, and the pilot had to use HF to get clearance back to take off there off of North Island in San Diego because there had been a big coronal mass ejection or something. But I thought that was really a rare occurrence.
When we were cruising across the pond, most everything went through the ACARS via satellite. But there was a few times they actually had to use the HF and reach out to, at some places in Greenland and up around Canada as we approached the coast.
Funny, but glad to share your experiences, Fred. And I got to let you go. I'm down here near my eye appointment, but the player's all fine. And I'll get your call wrong if I say it, but I'll just sign with mine and be clear on your final. This is N0TR73, Fred. Have a good day.
I'll be clear, KI4MRA.
KI4MRA in 0TR clear.
Bye.